esa minera que la quiero ver aquí con su rebozo de seda.
Mariachi Los Camperos with Llegaron Los Camperos, which is mostly El Son de la Negra. Classic mariachi tune they will be performing this weekend with the Madison Symphony. And that just about does it for the program. This is Peter Haney saying we'll see you on the back porch next week.
Hello, I'm Roisin Hasty with the BBC News. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said an offensive against Hamas in Rafah will be carried out regardless of whether a ceasefire and hostage release deal is reached. Hamas has still not given its response to the latest ceasefire proposals hammered out during talks in Cairo. From Jerusalem, here's our Middle East correspondent Yolan Nell.
This Hamas delegation that was in Cairo meeting Egyptian and Qatari mediators left, and we understand that they're now in consultations with the top Hamas leadership. Feeding into that, we do have these new comments by the Israeli Prime Minister. On the one hand, he's reiterating what he's said now for many weeks, that Israel is still determined to go into Rafah in the very south of the Gaza Strip to eliminate Hamas battalions there, that they'll do that with or without a new hostage deal. But obviously the timing here is of the essence. This is a very sensitive moment, and there are fears that anything could scupper a new deal at this point.
A senior Islamic State group commander wanted for a string of high-profile attacks in Africa is reported to have been killed. Abu Huzaifa had a $5 million US bounty on his head. Our Africa regional editor Will Ross reports.
Abu Huzaifa has been described as a key commander in the Islamic State's Sahel province affiliate. He was linked to several high-profile militant raids in the region, including a 2017 attack which killed four American soldiers and several troops from Niger. State television in Mali said he was a Moroccan national. Officials say he was killed as a result of a joint operation involving troops from Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso. All three countries have suffered from relentless attacks by jihadist fighters. Now under military rule, they've been forcing international troops to leave and have been welcoming support from Russia.
The US Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, has arrived in Jordan on the second leg of his latest Middle East tour. He'll meet King Abdullah and senior officials, with discussions expected to focus on boosting aid deliveries to Gaza. Police in Spain have arrested dozens of people for their role in what's known as the Dad, I'm in Trouble scam. Victims received texts purporting to be from a close relative asking them for help. Here's our Europe regional editor, Paul Moss.
It's now one of the most common forms of fraud, so you might think nobody would still fall for Dad, I'm in Trouble. But a gang in Spain managed to con nearly €1 million from victims. They first looked for people with grown-up children who were away. Then they hit them with an apparently desperate text message, making it look like their relative was in urgent need of cash. But police in Spain managed to trace the bank accounts money was sent to and the phones used. 102 people have now been arrested.
You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Just Coffee, Madison's Fair Trade Roasting Cooperative. Just Coffee buys fair trade coffee to ensure equitable conditions for coffee grower cooperatives around the world and roasts locally in small batches. More information at 204-9011 or on the web at justcoffee.coop.
Attention WORT volunteers and donors. WORT is holding an election for two open participating member seats and one open listener sponsor seat to serve three-year terms on the board of directors of Back Porch Radio Broadcasting, Inc., with terms beginning at the annual meeting in June and concluding at the annual meeting in June 2027. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work within a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, May 15th to ensure consideration. Voting begins Thursday, May 30th and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 30th. More information and board applications are available at wortfm.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
Support for this program comes from DaneNet. Since 1996, this Madison nonprofit has focused on digital equity, both by providing professional IT, tech, and website support to other nonprofits in Dane County, as well as digital equity programming in the community. DaneNet's goal isn't to make a profit. It's to help leverage technology in order to increase the efficiency and impact of nonprofit organizations. Nonprofit organizations looking for IT, tech, or website support can visit danenet.org for more information. That's Dane as in Dane County and net as in nothing but net. danenet.org.
Do you find yourself more enraged with every news headline?
Do you have crippling anxiety when you see pictures of starving polar bears on melting icebergs?
Are you shaking your fists at every new threat to bodily autonomy?
If you answered yes to these questions, we have an answer for you. Her Turn, WORT's feminist news, airs every Sunday at 11 a.m., and the Collective is looking for new volunteers to join us.
No previous experience needed, just a commitment to feminist news and a willingness to bring more women's voices to the radio. Call 608-256-2001 and say you want to volunteer on Her Turn.
Turn your anger into action. Turn your anxiety into hopefulness. Turn your discouragement into power. Volunteer with Her Turn right here on WORT Madison and make your woman's voice heard.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 Madison. Listener sponsored community radio.
The People's Station.
No justice! No peace! No justice! No peace! No justice! No peace! No justice!
No peace! No, I say you've been misled. You've been had. You've been took.
Man, listen, this is 2023, and we swinging chairs. I am not my ancestors, B.
Good morning, Madison.
Okay.
Good morning, Madison.
Yeah.
It is Tuesday. We are 8 o'clock buzz.
Yeah.
We're the two turnt crew.
Yeah.
Minus one.
Yeah.
One of our fellow co-hosts isn't feeling so good, but he got to get that voice back right for y'all because he got an important anniversary birthday show coming. Shout out Antoine McNeil.
Good morning, y'all. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is your hostess with the mostest. It's Tara, a.k.a. Big T of the Plug. Who else we got on the line? Who's here?
The Plug.
Good morning.
Good morning, it's Lolo Latour. I am actually about 10 minutes away from the studio or less. Y'all going to get me live and in action today. Good morning, Madison.
Good morning. I'm in the building. I'm in the building. You know. I'm here. How y'all doing this morning?
Man, I'm feeling good. Good.
I'm feeling good, too. I guess we're fresh off our Vegas trip, right? All right, what day was that? That was Saturday? Last Saturday we was in Vegas, right?
Friday, right? We flew there Friday. You got there Thursday. Me and Lil came out Friday.
Yeah, I flew out Thursday. Y'all came Friday. We killed it Saturday. I was this close to seeing 50 Cent live in VIP afterwards, but Vegas is weird, so I wasn't allowed to see 50 Cent with my shorts on, which is a whole different problem, but... We definitely had a ball in Vegas, though. We rocked it, and we got a show coming up this weekend. in Beloit. So it just continues. It keeps on going,
It was definitely an experience.
It was a vibe.
Yeah, it was definitely an experience, yeah. Vegas is different, and that trip out there really showed me a lot. As far as culturally, there's a huge lack out there. So I was glad to come out there and really bring some culture to that city. Even the way it's set up, it's got like just kind of like this, it's like it feels like a Vice City vibe.
It was dope because I've never been out there. I've never been out east either, but I've never been out west until then. So it's cool to be expanding and trying to do something, you know, somewhere I've never been just to see how it feels, you know what I mean? But Vegas got a vibe I've never felt before. It was pretty cool. It was pretty dope. I'm looking forward to going back out there again next month, as a matter of fact. And the food was delicious. Shout out to my cousin Trina Casey, who put this whole situation together, and her husband at the Hassan Cajun kitchen. Man,
yeah.
That's some good food. Hassan Cajun chicken. If you're ever in Vegas, check them people out. That's some amazing food. They put a lot of love and care in their food. And between them and us, we made sure that we rocked the building. It was dope. It was dope.
Yeah, for real. For real, it was really cool. I was told not to walk on the strip at night, so I waited till the morning and got up and walked. And, you know, they have 24-hour dispensaries. I was impressed. What they didn't have was 24-hour clothing stores, though, because we tried to find you some pants.
Oh, y'all, I got to Vegas and a friend of mine was already in Vegas and he found out I was there. So he hit me up and he was like, yo, what you doing tonight? I'm like, my show is tonight. He was like, well, I got something to do at the Circus Soleil, if I remember it correct. But he had VIP tickets to go see 50 Cent at a midnight concert. I'm like, all right, bet my stuff ends at midnight. A little bit after that, we'll pull up on you. Finally pull up on him, get ready to pay for valet. And found out that I'm not allowed in tonight because I don't have on pants, which is something I would have never thought I'd have heard out of Vegas.
They weren't like they were jean shorts either. They were linen, nice linen shorts.
I had on wallaby shoes. I had on like a silk button-up collared shirt. I was pretty fly. I guess not for Vegas, though, but whatever. I still had a ball, though. Vegas is amazing. I want to go out there a lot of times. I've never been there, and I'm ashamed of myself for waiting this long to go to Vegas. I should have been in the city of sin. It's crazy.
Well, you know me. I got to say, what did we learn from this experience?
apparently, I need to wear pants. I need to pack pants.
No, that wasn't it.
That's what I learned.
Apparently, you need to always pack
a suit.
But you got to understand, you're right. You're absolutely right. In most other circumstances, I would have been prepared, but I never thought that I would be in. I didn't expect to go spend money or nothing. I thought I was just coming to spend some time with family, hit the stage, and come on home. I really didn't have no intentions on doing anything like that. So I guess I should have had the foresight to think ahead, though. But you live and you learn, right?
That's all right, because we could be back for Memorial Day weekend.
Yep, yep.
Chance to redo it, a chance to invite folks from Madison.
Yep.
We're trying to put together a little vacation package for y'all, see if we can get a block of rooms,
yep,
get y'all to come out to. Have a great time. And me, this will be like my 20-something 11 time going to Vegas, and I still ain't been white girl wasted. Yeah, I said it.
You a That's veteran the thing. Out there.
College frat girl wasted. Whatever you want to say. Y'all know what I'm talking about.
Speaking of white girl wasted.
I mean, like girls going crazy, but not quite.
Slightly crazy. Girls call them slightly crazy.
20th drunkest cities in the United States, and Wisconsin like hit the mark like 10 times.
Way more than that. We were like 15 out of them. There's only a few other states. We had Appleton, Oshkosh, Madison. Name a city in Wisconsin. Yeah. We was the drunkest ones. Name a city.
I mean, that's what we know for, y'all.
I didn't even know.
Yeah, cities I never even heard of.
I thought we were known for beer. I mean, for cheese.
Nah, beer.
And cheese and being drunk.
Just beer.
And then and now with the news from Mifflin Street Block Party, we have reinforced that we are drunk and dumb. I don't want to be that.
That in my neighborhood this weekend.
I mean, it was wild again. I saw a headline that said cars were turned over and several arrests. I did not see a lot about injuries, so I feel free talking about it, but I would assume there was injuries. But, I mean, it's been some years. I thought they had cleaned it up or maybe it had been canceled. I don't know. Like, I remember years back that a patio, like some patios fell, but that wasn't necessarily people being rowdy. It was just people crowding them little, you know, when you look downtown, you know, that's older property. Why would you
I'm
put.
I'm just going to say this, and I'm going to leave it at this. My go ahead, Tara. Sorry, Tate.
Go ahead.
My dad taught me the most dangerous individual in America is an angry white boy with a skateboard. So I'm just going to leave it at that when it comes to the Mifflin Street Block Party. All right.
Tell your dad I love him. He gives us jewels every week. Tell him I love him. I love your dad.
But we should get him on here.
Absolutely.
He's on here dropping jewels for the city. I don't understand flipping a car.
Because you weren't that drunk. There's a certain level of drunk you got to be to understand that.
I don't understand a party going awry flipping a car. Who the heck gets that excited that they flip a car? And then I'm going to go back to, because y'all know this show, we always go back to systemic racism. For real. I can't enjoy being in a parking lot for too long before or after going into a party. I can't show up at a park. I was at a visual, like people were out remembering and celebrating a lost life and the police was circling. We can't do nothing when you got melanin in your skin. Let me know, folks from the Latina and Mexican and Hmong communities, do y'all experience this when y'all gather? Because for Black people, Africa, y'all get this. I feel like y'all might too, but for traditional African American people, man, we can't get together in groups larger than two sometimes, dang, you know? And so I say this because I ain't never been to a Black party. I ain't never stood in the parking lot before going into the bar and tipped over no car, man. That's not part of what we do. And so I'm just wondering, like, what's the fear? And
I
then
think it's in
why
bombers.
Is it that
we don't drink?
Like, where mad protests? Like, what kind of music were the Mifflin Street people listening to? Jump Around, House of Pain. Like,
That
song is not bad. Like, you know, like, take it off the jukebox. Take it. It's gone. These people are too loud.
If it had been us, a week later, they'd had no loitering signs up in the streets and stuff like that.
I mean, in the police arrest, we'd have had perp walks down the. Boy. Let's go look at the app and see if it's a bunch of Mifflin Street looking people on the app.
Big Low.
Hey, girl, you looking beautiful as always. Okay.
Low.
Y'all got my coffee, got my water. I'm here.
I don't feel right without my Starbucks.
Shout out to Mad Town. It's Tuesday morning with the Two Turk crew. Y'all tuned into Warner. Joining us. What are we talking about today? Now that the gang is all here, well, almost the gang is all here. Shout out to Antoine McNeil.
Before we get lost in the sauce, I'm going to remind y'all we in Beloit this Saturday at Trina's Intimate Affairs. We're doing spoken word this weekend at home, and I'm excited about being at home, being able to do this because you not always get a chance to. I do a lot of rocking stages in other cities, other states, and all that, and you know, I'm kind of. Glad to be home, you know what I'm saying? So I'm looking forward to this Saturday in Beloit. Got a lot of chatter. My people don't buy tickets early, so I have no idea who's coming, but ask me the day of. Looks like we're going to be cracking, though, so pull up if you're in Beloit.
Yeah, I'll definitely be there also, so it's going to be a live show. I know it is. I wanted to also, on the walk up, I was listening to you, Tara, talk about systemic racism, and I'm really glad that you brought it up because I think it's a prevalent point. We know that Madison itself is over-policing Black communities. It's something that's been discussed for years in political circles and everything. But, you know, it's not something that's really talked about in the forefront. Mm-hmm. Tara, myself, and Rase, we run a group up at the Juvenile Retainment Center, in case Madison didn't know.
Yeah.
And a lot of our children that we serve our Black and brown children. And I have to remind them and let them know that your communities are over-policed. And here in Madison and in Milwaukee, you have the highest level of Black and brown children that are incarcerated in America.
In America. Milwaukee's in America.
In America,
yeah. It's crazy.
John Legend, he did a whole documentary. I don't think it's been released yet, but that he came to Madison and spoke with the DOJ, and he went to Milwaukee and did a lot of interviews, and just to get to the root of why is this? Over-policing is the number one cause. We don't invest enough in our mental health. We don't invest enough in education. We don't invest in these programs that will help keep children off of the streets. We don't deal with food insecurities that they deal with, which is probably about, I think the numbers are kind of ridiculous, 67 to 70 something percent of children deal with food insecurities. 80 something percent of our Black boys can't read at the age of 12 to 13. And we've just got these numbers that flow and pour out of Madison that are just swept to the side. So I'm really glad that that point was brought up, sis.
Hey, speaking of...
Just
last week in Beloit, we just had an incident in Beloit. There was it was an incident with the police. The police shot and killed the guy. He was standing in the street with like a sword. But there was distance, and that's some of those mental health things that we were just speaking of, like when it comes to Black, brown, poor people or whatever, or when it just comes to the police, actually, they don't care about not shooting you and killing you. If they have a reason to, you're standing in the street with a sword being disruptive. Sound like a mental health issue to me, or it sound like maybe before you shoot this man, maybe shoot a warning shot in the air. Maybe that'll scare him and put him down. Maybe don't just immediately shoot someone. It's just too much. These police are out of control. This was a Beloit incident, and I've seen it a few times. People sent it to my inbox. I also saw it on social media as well. But it's just terrible that I'm gonna shoot you. You know what I mean? It's the first option, like, and lots of shots too, not just one shot in your foot.
That's
to put
the way
you down.
Policing is set up in
lots
America.
Lots and lots and lots of shots to make sure that he's dead. It was horrible to see. Somebody sent it to me. I hated to watch it, but I had to.
It's definitely the nature of policing itself. Go ahead, Tara. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's two conversations, and I'm fine where, you know, I'm always fine for wherever the conversation go, but I'm going to say this part first because often in this conversation, we go to critiquing the police. Absolutely needs to be done. Change needs to happen there. And we know there's strong feelings about that in this group. And what I want to say right now, because first of all, you know, I'm solutions based. And so for me, yes, the police are a problem. They're a huge problem, historical problem. And today's solution to me is removing mental health. Like, there's not a reason that police action and response should be the response to a mental health crisis.
Correct.
Put things in place that when you witness or someone you care about is having a mental health crisis, you have someone to call that isn't the police. Absolutely. Now, Madison has taken first steps into this with our CARES team, where they're pairing specially trained officers with rescue person, right? So somebody who's from EMS with a mental health technician from Journey Mental Health. So they've partnered on this project. And last year and the year before, it was active in downtown Madison. Then they've started to move it out. And one of the things that was part of that original design was to have somebody on the team that's coming from our world, that lived experience world. Mm-hmm. And they have be able to my knowledge, please, anybody from CARES or anybody who has the information, if they've budgeted and included this role and I missed it, please let me know. But in the beginning, and as far as I'm aware, that role has not been fulfilled yet. And then also the discretion of how that team comes out is still held in the police officer, right? And so while they have special training, the reality is if I go today to become a police officer, my tactical training does not include the same trauma-informed approaches that are required in a mental health incident.
Correct.
that mental health technician has, because I would be a mental health technician and not a police officer. Right. And then speaking to what you said, Rase, about a warning shot in the air. Yeah. To somebody who's not tactically trained in any way with a gun, that sounds reasonable. But having gone through concealed carry, you're trained that if you pulled a gun, you're supposed to be ready to shoot. And there is no warning shot. Right. Like, that's the importance of pulling your gun. That's the reality.
Got,
and so
they
that's
still got
go
tasers
back.
On their hip or no. They still got tasers. Well,
absolutely. But this is where the conversation promptly moves over to biases and individuals. Mm-hmm. And that's where we mm-hmm. right back. Right. So I'm not denying that.
Seem
I'm
like
not
they have this, patience this, for certain people and not quite me, other.
The
people.
Easier solved problem is how do we respond right now today to a mental health crisis? Mm-hmm. One of my daughters witnessed one of her neighbors interacting with the police in her neighborhood, and she knew it was a mental health crisis, having had a baseline for observing this neighbor previously and not watching their behavior. And she called me wanting to know what can be done, because clearly the police weren't the people who needed to be there. Now, luckily in that scenario, the police that did arrive recognized the same thing, and it sounded like had started trying to work with that CARES team. But I told her, call that crisis line at Journey. That's really the only thing you can do.
Yeah.
And the only thing we can do right now is when you witness it, right, call Journey before you call the police. And I don't know if that even necessarily doesn't trigger the police part of it, but we need other resources. We need other tools to address those situations. Because I'll tell y'all, I don't know if this group knows and how long it has been since I shared it, but I grew up in the household with a police officer, right? My mm-hmm. father, that chosen profession. And so before I had any understanding of culture of these things, I knew what it was to love a police officer. I knew what it was to spend Sunday barbecues and softball games with a bunch of police officers. Yeah. And so one of the things that was a challenge for me when I got to town is I saw police officers as a person working a job. And police officers in Madison, I came from a small town where that was reality. They're part of our community. They're persons working a job. Whereas in Madison, it was a force. It was a task. Like, my interactions with police were coming off of Darbo and Simpson, and they're pulling us over and right in my mouth. I knew my rights, and I had interacted with them as people. And so my mouth, boy, and I didn't even know that I was moving from a space of system interruption and advocacy, right? I just was responding to the fact that I grew up with community officers as my dad's best buddies, and I knew them. And so when the officer showed up at my window, buddy, you're at work. You know what I'm saying?
It's interesting, anyway, Mike.
Right? So I bring that into this space, but I mean, we already know.
Yeah.
We already know the reality. There was just that horrific shooting in Chicago last month that I haven't seen a lot going on around about, because it's crazy that Rasta, you just had to share with us about the shooting in Beloit. I knew nothing about that either. And admittedly, I'm not the person that's always on the news, but it used to be that you couldn't miss things like that a couple years ago. And here we are back in complacency, which is what some folks were saying in judgment of all of the activities that were happening when we were out in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a reason where I would call the police. That's terrible, because there could be a reason why I need to call the police, and I will defer. I'm not calling. Not because I'm worried about myself. I ain't did no crime or nothing, but interaction with the police don't always go well, and I ain't willing to take that chance. You understand what I'm saying? And really, my life is at stake by calling the law, which is wild.
So, I mean, a lot of people know my story, and they know one part of my story. And it was my nephew being killed at the hands of a Madison police officer. I've actually taken to the word annihilated, because I think people get extremely uncomfortable when they hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And I like for people to feel uncomfortable when they hear it. But the duality that exists is, and I want to give a bit of a trigger warning, because I'm going to talk a little bit about suicidality, and I don't want anybody to be, in a bad space. But when I was 16, so if you're listening and don't want to hear about that, tune out, jump in about 2 minutes, we'll be done with it. But when I was about 16, I dealt with suicidality, and I took a bunch of pills to, kill myself, sorry, or in my life. And a friend of mine, she had called me, and I was in and out of consciousness, and she recognized that something seriously was wrong. And so she called the police. I was living in Stoughton, Wisconsin. And an officer came in, Officer John Vogel. I'll never forget him. To this day, I love him. I keep in contact with him. But he came in, and he picked me up. EMS wasn't even there yet. He had picked me up. He carried me downstairs. He got me into the hospital, into the ambulance, and got me to the hospital. And I had handed him, I guess, the letter that I had written at some point, and before I completely lost consciousness. When I woke up, he was there. Officer Vogel was right there. And he handed me back that letter. And he told me, I read this, and he said, I cried for hours, and I never want to see you write anything like this again. So whatever we have to do to make you desire the will to live, that's what we're going to do. And he worked with me. And so there's a duality that I felt. I do not hate all police officers. I feel like they are given an impossible task that, as Tara was saying, that they have to deal with so much on a regular basis. And there's not many of us that get up every day and put a uniform on and don't know if we're going to live that day. Anything can happen when you're in the line of fire. I mean, we can refer back to the quote, you live by the gun, you die by it. This is what they carry every single day. This is what they're trained for every single day. And so I do see the disconnect there. I do see the need for our police officers to have college educations. They need to be in school for 2 to 4 years. They need to have ethics courses that are done annually with them. They need to have training that is refreshed annually. Yeah. And when you get these new officers that have gone through all that training out there, you pull the old ones out and then you put them through the same training. Make them go back to school, and this is the way that we can continuously progress. But that really starts with, as we were saying, with actionable steps, voting.
Yeah.
Getting yourselves out there and voting locally. Getting yourselves out there and voting for Congress, voting for Senate, voting for aldermen, voting for everything local that you possibly can, because these are the politicians that we can vet that can put these policies into place, that can hear what we have to say. And if they don't, well, they only got 2 years. Get them out. So it's.
Let me add just a moment, because one of the things I learned in some of the work we're doing with some of the work that United Way and Dane County and NAACP are doing with the local leaders of color and law enforcement committee is that connection. And one of the things I learned in that space, similar to school district woes, the union is one of the places that change and advocacy is required. Because when we started diving into the idea of who's training officers, how are they being trained to be on the streets? The holdup wasn't the chiefs. It wasn't the trainers. It was the retired older generation police officers who are on that union and in this space. Right. And I remember that made me think about remembering how when I was really dug into the district, when I had kiddos in the district and was still believing that it was anyway, I'm not gonna go there. When I was in the district and we learned also that MTI, right, that the teachers union is a big power player. And I don't know enough about unions and unionizations and how do you impact unions, right? From the outside looking in, it's fees and you're there and representation, but the light that's been shown on unions also feels like it's nepotism and seniority, like the old boys club, maybe. I don't know. I'm not in one, but these are my perceptions from the outside. Somebody who knows, maybe this is a conversation we can have. We're bringing folks in, because how do you advocate and make change in a unionized space, in a union, if they're really feeling like the gatekeeper and the bottleneck to change? Go back to what you said, because everything, I agree with everything. I just wanted to add that part because that was something that I thought was interesting from being in some of those spaces.
Yeah. And, you know, the union is, I mean, the police union really is above the law. That's a completely other subject that we couldn't even begin to touch
that's
on without having at least 3 hours.
When it's all said and done.
But Shady, Shadira Kilfloy Flores, shout out to Shady. She said that another option is joining the PCOB to have an input on the MPD policies and procedures.
The PCOB?
PCOB
that's
is
a, when you have back on.
Go for it, Tier.
No, you go ahead. I'm interrupted to say, Shady, shout out. You need to come back on the show.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. I can't remember the exact words behind the acronym, but it is a board.
I just think I know it. Go ahead.
Do you know it?
I'm looking it up.
PCOB. John, do you know it?
Police Civilian Oversight Board.
There we go.
I got Google over here.
There you go. Thank you, John. The reluctant host. Thanks, bro.
So, yeah, it's a board of some really great leaders in the community. A lot of them.
Yeah, shout out to Shady and Keitra. Keitra Burnett and Shady are leading the way, and they've been sticking through. They've been fighting through since they got on there. So shout out to them.
Yeah, they have. They have. But it's a really important move that Madison made. Because who better to police the police than us? who better to determine what their policy should be for us than us.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's been a process, and they, and like Tara was saying, it has really been a fight for them. But, everything is moving. They're actually, I can't talk about it in too large of a capacity, but they're actually helping with the case with Tony as well.
That's
so it's something, is something that's really to be said about them, Madison taking the initiative to form this.
Shout out 2024 for finally addressing. 4 years taking a long time.
It's been a while.
Jeez.
I wanna have a link to like making referrals to them and information to them on the website. Y'all, that's all y'all gonna hear about for the next rest of this month. This next week is what I want on the website. I'm so excited. Yeah. We're about to launch this website.
Good, because Shady just said they're in need of new members.
I would love to have something like that where people who are on there can get more information and get connected to them, because that's the other part of this. It's dope to have the space, right? To have this committee that's going and running and supported by our city. And if the community don't show up and tell the stories, what they gonna work on? What they gonna make change? How, right? There's still the disconnect to making immediate impactful change. Yeah, it's the same thing with some of the work we're doing with the hospitals around Black maternal health. If we don't connect and talk and tell our stories to the people who are lined up and at the table to talk to the people in power, to even test the waters of change, change ain't coming. And so that's our part of community, is it's great for our leadership, for people who step in and fight every day like Keetra and Shady and so many more people. And we got to give them the water, right? Yeah. If they're the water pourers and the water bearers, I'm going to go to you, Aquarius, right? If y'all ain't got nothing in that bucket, what y'all, you know?
Yeah, agreed. Nikki Cooper just in agreeance to you said nothing about us without us. And shout out Coop.
That's why Sag says, you know the Sages is going to come through.
Right, you know she going to slide through with the wisdom.
I found this Sagittarius meme site on Facebook. Anybody who's my Facebook friend knows exactly when I found it, because I was going post crazy. I had a headache. I wasn't supposed to be looking at my phone, and I couldn't get off that stupid web.
Grow up.
Yeah. Anyway, but Nikki was one of the first, she was one of my first Sag sisters to say she agreed. I was like, I know you do, because she is Sag through and through like me.
Yeah.
Cooper go to war too. Cooper go to war.
Over them things, baby. We call them in peaceful till we ain't.
Yeah. I love me a Sag. Is that, ain't y'all an air sign too?
Fire.
Okay.
But we fire and we're mutable. That's why you think we air. Because we fire and we mutable. Yeah. So we can.
So I don't stir you up.
When I told Ross, I'd be a little flighty.
Get this out the way. Gemini season on the way.
Oh, man. I want to just bring up something, y'all. When we were talking about shooting, I'm an Aquarius, so my pattern of thinking goes a little different. I was thinking about all the shootings we are seeing lately and how they're centered around domestic violence. Most recently, there was two friends that had previously fought before, and one of the friends actually ended up shooting and ending her friend's life. This morning, my friend Emily Merritt, it's been a very public thing, so I don't think she'll mind me speaking on it, but she's going to court in Joliet. She's facing a case against her dad, who was really being extremely just physically aggressive and violent against her. And I just, I really wanted to take a moment to acknowledge this woman. I met her, around the time of 2020 when George Floyd was killed. And when I tell you, this girl, she organized like nobody I'd ever seen. She didn't belong to any organization. She never got paid for it, but coat drive after coat drive, investing dollars after dollars to make sure that the people were fed. She was out there all night long feeding the homeless.
That's what's up.
And even now, just putting in a lot of work. And so she's currently on her way to Joliet. And I thought about that, just the tragic state when we think about this world and what domestic violence is really doing. And just violence in general, how we're so desensitized to all of it. It's just, it's really alarming. And, you know, I'm praying that we're going to end up going in a different direction. But man.
The desensitizing is real. Back to this video in Beloit, I had watched the video, so I knew about it. But then I was scrolling, and I saw a homegirl of mine was going live, and I saw her get on her phone, and she was talking about she hasn't seen the video yet, but let me see it. You know what I mean? So I know the video because I've watched it.
Mm-hmm.
But the desensitizing part is how I watched her on live. I watched her watch the video for the first time, and it didn't blow her mind like it should have. You know what I mean? It was almost like she's watching like, oh, dang, that's, oh, man. But it didn't, we've seen so much of it, so many times of it, often, over and over and over again. It's not even, it doesn't send us in a rage as it used to. It doesn't make us feel what we used to. It's kind of, here we go again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're kind of numb to it.
The scarier part about that for me, Rossay, is, as adults, we recognize the shift and the change, right? You can remember, if you sat and thought about it, you can remember when that started happening for you, right? And I'm sure she could too. But what about our young people who this has been a constant in their reality as it forms? And so who are they, right? Most of our personalities are forming. They formed at a young age, like those things that happen in those milestones of growth. That's part of why we do what we do now. All of us know that if we think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean for, like, I think this for my 7-year-old grandson, where his whole life that he's been able to communicate and understand, display comprehension. He's already had a concept of death because first his dad's, you know, younger parents, his dad's generation and friends were murdered through gun violence. And so he had attended funerals and heard his father talking about it and witnessed the grief around it. And then he was aware, you know, 2020, he was aware of that. He watched that. That was a significant happening in everyone's life.
Yeah.
And it continues to be. And so his desensitization.
There you go.
Right. He's been desensitized from the beginning.
Mm.
And then if we know that trauma is carried from mother to child maternally, what was his mom witnessing? Right. And so, wow. That's why the work that some of us are doing around these topics is so crucial, because it comes down to our individual ability to process these things, to withstand being sensitive.
Mm.
That's why we desensitize, because it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
How much trauma can you process?
Yeah.
And as far as
then it's right here on your phone. You can't even get away from it. People go to Facebook and stuff like that to be numb, to move away from that, right? It's supposed to be an entertainment and communication. And the times I tell y'all I'll be off it, it'd be my mental health. Sabrina say? I'm protecting my peace. And so if that's been your constant reality, and then we're not even going to start talking about pop culture, music, video games.
And I will say that when I was watching the old girl on her live, that's what she said too. She was like, I usually don't watch these type of things. I got to protect my peace. I don't watch these type of things, but I'm going to watch this because I'm from Beloit and this happened from Beloit. So she felt like she needed to do her due diligence. You know what I mean? But it's a lot of people that won't even, I'm not watching. A lot of people will tell you, I'm not watching no more of that. I can't see no more of that. I can't keep looking at this over and over and over. And I understand it. And also, I'll let you go too low. And also, it makes you think about these younger kids. Like I got four kids. My daughter's old enough. She's been around long enough to know. But for my son, he's 21, and my other kids are younger. But you're right. Like, he's 21. That means he's paid attention to the world 4 or 5 years, maybe. So it's common to him. Like he doesn't know a time when this wasn't wild and the police wasn't doing this and the violence wasn't at this. There isn't a time where it grew into this. It's just been like this as long as he's been paying attention. So I can understand it.
Yeah.
I can understand it from their view. Seeing it so different from where we see it change, become better, become worse, become whatever. He's just seen it constantly being, this is what it is.
Well, one of the things I tell my kids is, like, if you're not, my children and the children that I teach, if you're not careful, the world will tell you who you should be.
Who you should be, yo.
And you'll follow that. Yeah. You'll follow it.
Yeah.
It's glorified to the point, I've told Tara the story before. It had another instance happened over the weekend recently that kind of solidified for it, but it's glorified for these young boys to be out here carrying guns.
Yeah, switches and everything.
And because this is what is promoted so freely, the young women think that you're lame if you haven't carried a gun, if you don't have one, if you haven't shot at somebody. There's something in particular that I'm dealing with right now, and one of the young men that's present in my life is dealing with an attempted murder because him and his friend decided that they were going to shoot at some kid at a bus stop. And you just, you think about how many songs or how social media, like Tara was saying, how these things influence these decisions for these kids.
Adults too.
And there you go. And that's the other part.
Absolutely.
Which is, it's just so crucial to learn to control our emotions. It is so crucial to learn emotional comprehension, to learn the things that we teach to these kids.
Empathy.
And Tara's going to move it into the prison so that we'll have a whole generation of men coming out that are emotionally aware and empathetic and considerate and the things that we need. All of that we need our older men to be out here teaching our younger boys. We need them.
Man, sis, thank you so much for speaking that into the ether. I appreciate you. And I gotta give a shout out to a brother I just met with before I left out of town.
Yeah.
Dante Cottenham. Mr. Cottenham is coming out of Racine, Wisconsin. He's gonna start, y'all gonna start seeing him. He's gonna be around. We're gonna bring him on the show, coming into our community as well. But you made me think of him when you just said that about going into the prisons, because he is tapped into what's happening in that reentry and inside the prison as well. And so I want to make sure that while we're talking about Edo moving into the prison and expanding our work in that way, that I acknowledge there's some people doing some dope stuff in there right now.
Yes.
And he's one of the brothers that's been connected to that work. We've got Odyssey Project that's doing work in our prisons. And we know we're alumni and fans, and we love the Odyssey Project. Shout out
Emily
and the team. Okay, so they're doing that work. And then we know Expo Wisdom have been part of that work.
Mm-hmm.
From our peer support world, Lo, me and Dominique have been honored to be selected to go into our incarcerated situations. I've been in 3 times. I believe me and her have been in twice together. But so we're open to always going back in to do training. So we've got peer support happening by trained peer support, especially those connections. I mean, just there are things happening, and we definitely. So all those folks from DOC, get us. Come holler at us, because we're trying to expand and partner with y'all to be in there doing that direct work.
608-256-2001. Call in now if you work at the DOC, if you got some type of pull, get us in there. We're into rehabilitation, not re-facilitation.
Yeah.
That was one of those mic drops. Bing, bing, bing. That felt
Nikki Cooper says we got to deprogram to reprogram.
That sounds like cool.
Maya Pearson, she has a question. She said, how do we catch our babies before so we are not always reactive but being proactive?
Ooh.
You know what, Maya? Nobody has the for sure answer, but in my logic, in my parenting style, it's proactive education. I'm not afraid to have any conversation with my kids, and my kids' vocabulary is off the chain because I tell them the words, I use the words, and we define them. Because it's not that children don't understand the words, it's that we haven't exposed them. It's anything. It's, think about how smart we are when we're younger. Our brains are just, the neurons are growing and firing. Yep. If you get with like a 3-year-old, you can teach them multiple languages. So we have to remember that when we talk to our kids, that their social emotional intelligence might not be high because of culture and training and like emotional brain development, really chemical development. But the ability to learn and comprehend is high. It's literally what you're doing when you're little, is sucking up information. And so that's my first thing, is unfiltered education, so that they're given the tools to process it. When I have to do that around the music my kids listen to. If I'm honest, that's where it started. When my kids started listening to some of them songs that they was overhearing or choosing on their own when I wasn't there, I was like, oh no, this can't be without parental. That's what parental advisory means.
Yeah.
You advise your child. It don't mean you say don't have it, because we know what, I'm one of those people, you tell me I can't do it, I can't have it, I'm going to go a little harder.
Yeah.
And so that's natural to young people, I believe, most of them. And so I'm not forbidding anything. I'm preparing you, because I'm a realistic person. You're going to encounter it. And when you encounter it, I need you to do what you need to do, right? Like, be able to manage and get around it. So that's the first thing I would say, is preparation. And then the bigger picture is working to change it, because no matter how many protections we put in place, it's coming from every direction. It's seeping through the cracks and pores, and we can't be that vigilant. You can't be right there to filter everything. If you could, you wouldn't know about stuff, because Maya is a sweet soul. I know she'd rather not have to fight for these fights, right? And so it's those two things for me, and also recognizing that this is not something we have an immediate absolute answer to, but we have to work in, for me, I have to walk in a realistic world, and that means prepared. Preparation and tools, language, and then safety precautions, right?
Preparation prevents poor performance.
There you go.
All that. Right?
Also, one thing that if you guys ever get a chance, Google or go to YouTube and look up this TED Talk called Emotional Fluency. He throws out I want to change the world. I'm trying to drop all the gems. But a lot of it has to do with, are you creating a safe space for your children to be completely open? So a loving environment. Are you creating this space where they feel comfortable to talk about their feelings, where they feel comfortable to work through them? Because that's one of the things we don't have. Nikki Cooper just brought it up again, and I'm glad she did, because this was definitely something I wanted to mention. But it was the low amount of mentorship programs and groups that are available for our children today. They don't have very many. It's part of the reason why JRC loves us so much, why they're going to make sure that we stick around, because it's an absolute need. These mentorship programs create safe spaces that maybe these children have never seen before. And so when we do this, we can reach beyond the formidable years that were neglected. We can reach beyond the years that maybe their parents weren't able to provide this type of education for them, because they weren't immersed in the language of emotional fluency. And so when we are able to do that, when we're able to create these spaces, we can pull teenagers in, we can pull 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds and 24-year-olds in, because it's something that 50-year-olds in, because you're creating a space that they've never seen before, where you're safe. You are completely safe here.
Let me say this.
Yeah.
First of all, this is why y'all can't have low. All you organizations that some of y'all been asleep, some of y'all been woke, but now y'all see she on Team Edo. Don't come over here and try to poach the people. Because this is why, first of all. But then, next thing is, I did not hire Nikki. It's the Sagittarian insight in my sister. But that's the perfect segue for us to talk about our upcoming Mentoring the Mentor training. We are out here about to get these business owners and these black men to the table again. If some of y'all who've been watching the work know I've done this previously, Mentoring the Mentor pulls. Boy, the criteria to get in this training is lived experience. It's being the hood guy. The dude who gets it, that's in the situation, been in the situation, to come and learn some about this trauma-informed Edo approach, so that they are better prepared to talk to the youth who are currently in the trenches, right? You got to have come from the trenches to be able to talk to me about the trenches.
Yes, sir.
The criteria, last year, the first year I put out this application, I had a brother who got on the Zoom for the interview with his camera off and told me he had a job in a system that he couldn't afford to have really understand the whole depth of his previous experiences, right? And said that he showed up like seeing if it was a hoax, maybe like if it was a setup, because he had never seen something like that with those type of criteria, right? But I told you, you just made me proud, brother, right? Like, but so shout out, real talk, to anybody who, particularly black men, but anybody who's interested in this work. If you want to impact our youth, you think you got something to give back, and you've got relevant lived experiences to deal with and reflect on what our youth are dealing with right now, then holler at us, because we got this training coming up. I'm super excited. Corey Marinoff from the Black Men's Coalition of Dane County has expressed interest in maybe bringing this program in to his participants. So lots of great stuff. And if you're an organization that has mentorship, is looking to start a mentorship program, holler at us, because this is a curriculum to come in. We can help certify your workers too. Yes. We are not selfish at Edo. We do the work well, but we need y'all to do the work well too.
We don't gatekeep
nothing. So we're going to share the love. Baby, that's part of what we teach.
Teach one.
Rush that joker. But man, I appreciate everybody who's tuned in, chopping it up with us. Thank you, John, for keeping our technician together. The team be in, out, and everywhere. But we still come together here on Turnt Up Tuesdays. Shout out for giving us a platform and continuing to keep us. Okay, we got it together. Man, thank y'all. 89.9 FM Wart, WORT. This is the Tuesday 8 o'clock buzz, the Tuesday two turnt crew. Man, thank y'all for your input. Thank y'all for being here, and thank y'all for being here with me. Obviously, now last week I was in there talking my face off. Me and John got it together, but it's always so much better. You know, when three of us gather, big things happen, and so here we are, big stepper.
Shout out to our internet nation too, out here watching Wart Online. Appreciate y'all. We love y'all, Madison. We love y'all.
Saturday in Beloit. I'm just going to plug that one more time.
Saturday in Beloit.
Saturday in Beloit. Also, pull up.
Start getting them coins together for the Memorial Day show.
Back in Vegas.
Las Vegas. So, I know y'all want to go out there and watch Vegas,
because we back out there again.
Get WGW. What is that more politically correct?
What is WGW?
White girl wasted.
Me and John was like, what? Both of us, neither one of us knew what she was talking about. WGW. You got a lot of secret things going on, WGW.
This is the first time that I'm the one suspect to getting the call. It's usually Antoine or Rosé, where we're like, the number is, if you need to have conversation about what was just said. This is the first time I said something semi-controversial.
Disclaimer, y'all know what it is. Disclaimer, the views of Tara does not necessarily represent the views of the rest of us.
We got to get that information out on the internet so they can get these packets and come out there, because this Vegas trip, 608 in the 702, baby.
Yeah, it was lit. And 608 was in the building. Beloit was in the building. It was nice to have people from Beloit that already lived in Vegas and I haven't seen in years and years.
Can't wait till we get this interview done. We're going to share with y'all the venue, too. Like, across the board, this is it was such an Ujamaa event, right? Yes. Even though 550 was represented, it was still Ujamaa because a black business owner, black caterer, black performers, black audience, black cultural content, did I say venue, bartender, like black money circulating, black art on the wall,
black art on the wall,
right? And then when I told y'all, some of y'all be like, why do she travel? We building this. Rosé, Latour, Tara, Christian Red, Dominique, we gonna keep hitting these airways, these highways, and building this network. That's how we change.
I'm tired of this. I'm getting up out of here again. Let's go.
We love you, Madison. We love you. Can't wait to see you next Tuesday.
Salute.
Peace. Let's go, John.
Take us out of here, John.
I feel brand new. number two. Cause I just killed my baby.
You've been listening to Tuesday 8 O'Clock Buzz, WORT, Madison, Wisconsin. Coming up next, 3 hours of folk music on One Fine Morning with Peter Allen. But first, the Insurgent Radio Kiosk. See y'all next week. You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison, Wisconsin.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Tuesday, April 30th.
Woody Guthrie's cure for inequality in America was straightforward. Rich folks got your money with politics, you can get it back with politics. For Guthrie, politics meant more than voting, since both parties routinely cough up candidates who meekly accept the business-as-usual system of letting bosses and bankers control America's wealth and power. It's useless, he said, to expect change to come from a choice between Tweedledum and Tweedledumber. Instead, common folks must organize into a progressive movement with their own bold change agenda, become their own candidates, and create a politics worth voting for. Pie in the sky? No. Periodic eruptions of progressive grassroots insurgencies have literally defined America, beginning with that big one in 1776. Indeed, we could take a lesson today from another transformative moment of democratic populism that surged more than a century ago, culminating in, quote, the Omaha Platform of 1892. This was in the depths of the Gilded Age, a sordid period much like ours, characterized by both ostentatious greed and widespread poverty, domination by monopolies, rising xenophobia, institutional racism, and government that ranged from aloof to insane. But lo, from that darkness, a new People's Party arose, created by the populist movement of farm and factory mad-as-hellers. They streamed into Omaha to hammer out the most progressive platform in U.S. history, rejecting corporate supremacy, demanding direct democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying that platform reshaped America's political agenda, making reforms of the Progressive Era and New Deal possible. As one senator said, it was the start of robber baron wealth flowing, quote, to all the people from whom it was originally taken. And that's what Woody Guthrie meant by politics. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown on Substack. Find us at jimhightower.substack.com.